From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on November 15th with an announcement from the Oxford Dictionary on the International Word of the Year. There were plenty of contenders, alt-right, woke, Brexit, but Oxford chose the term post-truth. At least I think they did. Are there any facts anymore? Can anyone really tell if anything has actually happened? We're in a strange time. Donald Trump has nominated General James Mattis to be the Secretary of Defense. We've been hearing today that James Mattis has 10,000 books in his home library, but somehow that has been stretched to mean that he has read all 10,000 books. Last night, former Republican Congressman Mike Rogers said, quote, "I don't think he has a TV in his house, but he has 10,000 books, and those are just the ones that he kept after he read them," end quote. And this morning on the Diane Rehm Show, one of the panelists said he'd heard that General Mattis had read 10,000 books on military strategy alone. Are there 10,000 books on military strategy? Is there a diminishing return after like 1,000 books on military strategy? By the way, that would mean 200 books a year, reading 200 books a year for the past 50 years, nearly a book a day, no let up. Does anyone fact check anymore? And maybe the scarier question is, if we did fact check, would it matter? One of Donald Trump's surrogates, Scotty Nell Hughes, said yesterday that unfortunately, there are no such thing as facts anymore. I called some of our colleagues at the Democrat and Chronicle because I wanted to talk about the way forward for journalists, the way to establish or maintain trust, the way to cover, yes, the next administration, but the way to also cover our local communities. In studio, Dick Moss is here, the news director for the Democrat and Chronicle. Dick, nice to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Dave Andreatta is here. Dave's a columnist and reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle. Dave, nice to have you.
Good to be here, Evan.
And Dave, I'm just going to get this out of the way now, and I'll embarrass you with you several times an hour with this, but this is an exciting time for you. You've got a book coming out.
Oh, I've got a book coming out. That's what they're calling it. It's really more of a clip job.
You want to tell us what this is?
Sure. It's a compilation of my columns that I've written over the last 2.5 years since I started writing columns in the middle of 2014. I hit number 200 a few months back, and some people in positions of authority where I work thought it might be a good idea to put together an e-book. It's called I've Got This, and it'll be available for download on December 8th.
I did a deep dive in investigative journalism to figure out what the title means, and Julie Philip tells me it comes from the fact that many of your columns come from you responding to breaking news saying, I've got this in the morning news meetings. That's a common phrase?
Yeah, it's a common phrase, I'd say. You know, I like my columns to be I sort of take my columns in all kinds of different directions, but I tend to do one of two things, either go way off the beaten path and attempt to lend some perspective and break news on my own, which I still think is a valuable exercise, and I don't think enough columnists do that. But there's also this mandate, of course, that a column should be relevant and riff off or take off news that people are talking about. And so I try to do that regularly as well.
Next Thursday night at 8 p.m., you're going to do a Facebook Live about this?
That's what they tell me. I'm prepared.
I've
never done
one. It's part of the journalism landscape, isn't it? That's true. And I just read on your Twitter feed, you said that we're going to be talking about this hour about fake news, but also real news. And you made a very controversial claim. There is still real news.
There is still real news. You can find it right here on WXXI.
You're not here to shill.
But as a matter of fact, you broke some news yesterday with an interview that you did with Cheryl Denolfo. You can still find real news in your daily newspapers. And we can talk more about that, I'm sure, through the course of the hour.
Oh, well, I know we will. And Dick, I have said, and I'm going to say this again, and I know our listeners hear it from me a lot, but I am I'm an unapologetic supporter of not just the Democrat and Chronicle, but the value of local newspapers around the country. I fear for a time when they are largely gone. And I know we've seen sort of a sometimes diminished daily print run, or staffs are struggling. I think you do a lot with what you have. But I also am curious to know if you feel right now, is this a strange time for you, hearing this conversation about fake news, about post-truth? Is this a strange time, or is this, does this come in waves? Have we seen this before?
There's an old curse, may you live in interesting times. Sometimes I wish it was just a little less interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a very strange time. There seems to be an attack on facts, which is what we try to base everything we do on. You can tell whether it's raining outside by going out and putting up your hand and seeing whether it gets wet or not. That's a fact.
Yeah.
But even when we present facts, it doesn't seem that people are listening. And we have to figure out a way to entice people to listen. We have to engage people in not just put facts out there. So we have to figure out a way to make that work and help people to listen to what we're putting out there.
I want to listen to a couple of clips. And Trump supporters, if you think we're picking on you, we're not in doing that intentionally this hour. It's just that your candidate won the election. He's going to be the next president. He has, at many times, I think, been a little bit factually challenged. You know, and we're going to hit that in just a moment here. But I want to talk about why, when people are presented with information, it doesn't always get through. So there's two clips, and I want to start with this. John, we got them both, I hope, right? Yep. Okay. Let's start with this. Last week, we welcomed a panel of women who supported Donald Trump, and some of our listeners wrote to express frustration that the panel that hour was either uninformed about certain issues or misinformed. And here's an example. Our listeners wanted to know if the panel, who was in studio that day, was bothered by the incident in which Trump mocked a reporter who has a disability. That's a clip that went viral. You've probably seen it. Here's my exchange with one of the panelists. When Trump made fun of the reporter who has a disability, did that bother you to the point where did you think, was that a moment for you?
I had heard about that, but then I had heard that it wasn't true.
Oh, no, he did. He mocked a reporter with a disability.
Yeah. Well, you know, that goes back to, as we say, his flawed character. In my mind, he's very flawed. In my mind, she was more flawed.
Now, in this case, the panelist indicated she wasn't aware of something that I think it was hard to miss that moment. But she indicated she wasn't aware. She had heard it wasn't true. And at least when I brought the information forward that it was true, she didn't push back against that. So that's to her credit. But that was not the case in a CNN interview yesterday. CNN's Allison Camerota sat down with a group of Trump supporters. They were immediately repeating Donald Trump's recent claim that 3 million people voted illegally, and that's the only reason that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. And of course that's not true. It's an outright lie. But these voters believe it very strongly. Here's the exchange, starting with CNN's Allison Camerota.
Do you think that 3 million illegal people
I
voted?
I believe in California that there were illegals that voted.
How many?
I don't. To tell you the truth, nobody really knows that number.
But do you think 3 dozen or do you think 3 million?
I think there was a good amount because the president told people that they could vote, and it happened in Nashua. We caught some people that they went into Nashua and they said, the president said I can vote. I'm here illegally.
Did you hear President Obama say that illegal people could vote?
Yes, yes.
I heard it this morning.
I did hear
it. Tell me, where?
You can find it, Google it. You can find it on Facebook.
You can find it on Facebook. Yeah. Dave and Dick sort of winced a little bit there. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, that sigh your listeners might have heard as soon as the clip
that was
faded
you.
Out. That was me just going, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, you can hear it on Facebook. I mean, you hear that's a very common refrain nowadays.
It is.
But, you know, one thing that struck me about that last clip was that she acknowledged, that one of the supporters acknowledged that no one really knows that number of how many illegals may have voted, if any. Let's assume that some did. But is that number 3 million, 2 million, 1 million? No, nobody knows. And yet she continued to perpetuate the belief that somehow illegal immigrants tipped the scales in that election. I don't know. I can't get inside their head. And I don't understand how someone can come to that conclusion. But it's something that these are common refrains that we hear quite often.
Okay, Dick?
There's a book out called Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance that Dave and I have both read. And one of the more insightful things that he said in there was about the birther movement and the whole question of Obama's birth certificate. And he said that a lot of his friends, the people that he knows knew growing up, had heard the facts that Obama did have a U.S. birth certificate, and he was born in the States, but nevertheless chose not to believe that. And even after many standard media outlets had said otherwise, but they chose to not believe those reports. And I'm not sure what you do with that. It's just choosing to believe what they want to believe rather than the facts that are presented before them.
Yeah. Before the hour began, Dick and I were discussing the fact that this is a moment that I think at least newsrooms are asking themselves, you know, what our role has been that led to literally tens of millions of people going with motivated reasoning instead of just facts. But at some point, there's a bit of a civics lesson here. I mean, we have to champion the idea that, I don't know, I think there's a civics lesson here. I think, and it's probably complex, it's probably, we're probably too hooked on politics as team sports, on winning
right.
at all costs.
Right.
But I think we need to probably teach, starting in middle school, motivated reasoning, confirmation bias. The Dunning-Kruger effect is one of my favorite new ideas that we're going to be exploring on this program coming up soon. That's basically the American Idol effect. How can you be so bad at something and think you're actually competent at it? And the short answer is incompetent people don't know enough to realize they're incompetent. And that comes to voting and understanding government.
Right. And as journalists, we need to do a better job of incorporating civics lessons, if you will, into what we do. AP did something really good overnight on the defense secretary nominee, and they put out an explainer. They wrote up an explainer overnight on why, over the years, it has been they've really avoided appointing former generals to the defense secretary post for the most part because there's been a wish that it be kept in civilian control.
Right.
Right. And he'll require a waiver anyway.
Right. Yeah. And he will. And so AP put together the civics lesson on why that's hasn't been done much in the past. There have been some exceptions, but for the most part, it hasn't. And explained all of this. And I think we need to do more of that, not just at the national level, but locally too, explaining what the Board of Election does, how it does it, and actually walking people through that a lot more than we have in the past, because we've assumed that people know that, and I'm not sure that that's true anymore. I'm not sure people are being taught that in the education system.
On that note, though, Dick, I agree with you. I think it would be a wise and a good exercise for news organizations to take on. But we at the DNC have done those types of exercises, particularly around election season. We talk about election inspectors. What does it take to become an election inspector? And these are very short reads that, you know, don't involve a lot of time. They may or may not make the newspaper, but they're online. And we nowadays in newspapers, we're very cognizant of our online audience. We read metrics. We know how many people click on stories and that sort of thing. And let's be honest, those types of informative little stories, those blurbs, if you will, get almost next to no traction.
And that goes back to what I said earlier. We have to figure out ways to engage the audience in those kinds of discussions somehow. We need to figure out a way, and I think it's on us to figure out how to make that more engaging, because just putting it out there is not going to work.
Maybe I'll sing and dance next year.
Honestly, and it sort of makes you sad that you have to find a way to make that sexy.
It is.
But to Dick's point, functionally, we must.
Yeah, we have to figure out a way to do it.
I want to start taking your phone calls. And Patrick, we're going to come to you in a moment. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. At Evan Dawson on Twitter, and you can email me edawson@wxxi.org if you want to weigh in. To Dick's point about General Mattis and civilian versus military control of the military, NPR also had a short explainer this morning. And when I heard that, I thought, here's how much I've ever thought about should it be a civilian in control of the Department of Defense. Almost none. So my instinct in that moment is to say, wow, I know nothing. I just need to sit back and listen and absorb this. Instead of saying, how do I feel about Trump? Should I feel about his appointments? You know, having this motivated reasoning that this is a bad idea or this is a good idea. And instead of doing that, my goal was just to soak up as much information and perspectives as I could. My concern, Dick, is that contrary to that, and I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal. I think a lot of people do that. But I think some say, tune that out. No. Either Team Trump, yes, or anti-Trump, this is a bad thing. And again, maybe that's the team sport aspect, but there's a lot of motivated reasoning.
Well, and you saw it in, or at least I saw it in my own social feeds during the course of the campaign. People were turning off those people they disagreed with.
Yeah.
So it becomes an echo chamber, and you're just hearing things that reinforce or seeing things that reinforce what you already believe. And that's not just Republicans or Trump supporters. That goes for the other side as well.
Well, and you know, to jump off that, the AP or the or NPR running these type of explainers, the AP and the NPR are, and NPR are considered in some circles to be of that elite mainstream media.
Right.
And it automatically their news is automatically received with a healthy dollop of suspicion by, you know, people often in the you know, alt-right orbit.
Yeah, and here's Mike on Twitter, depressing me a little, but he writes to us and says, isn't part of the issue the way news is presented? Too much expectation that a reader must end up at a website or buying a paper. In other words, not enough effort to finance news operations in other ways and therefore place news there first, such as Facebook or Twitter. And he says, I'll know they say they do, but they don't. It's all about getting eyes to the website or the printed page. In other words, most traditional media is still, quote, preaching to the choir. And who's listening? Not the people who need this stuff. That's from Mike.
Well, but I would argue, though, that the you know, we'll just call it, for lack of a better term right now, the fake news websites, the alt-right news purveyors. I think they're posting on Facebook much the same way that the mainstream media is posting on Facebook. I mean, the DNC has a Facebook feed. It posts a story. You can often sometimes read one or two paragraphs of the story, but ultimately you must click through to get to the full story. I don't see it. I don't know where the listener is coming from when he says that it's not. That mainstream media is not putting this stuff out there on Facebook or is doing it differently than whatever news feeds he's reading. The news feeds I've seen are almost all the same.
Okay, Dick?
Yeah, I would agree with that. We make a conscious effort to put our news stories out on Twitter, on Facebook, on other social media platforms just to get it out there because we know a lot of people are going to news, getting their news through those forums.
Well, let's listen to our listeners and your
sure,
readers
absolutely.
For the rest of the hour. Every line is filled, and Dick Moss and Dave Andrietta are here from the Democrat and Chronicle. Patrick in Rochester, first up. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, guys. I appreciate the conversation and think it's a very timely one. I'm a listener to WXXI and get a lot of news from WXXI. I'm also a subscriber to the DNC, and I get a lot of my news, you know, from the printed newspaper that shows up on my doorstep. It concerns me. I'm a millennial. I'm college educated, you know, and I vote, but I really struggle to tell the difference between what's fake and what's real. Besides, like, you know, the known mainstream media, Washington Post, New York Times, DNC, WXXI, how do I tell what's fake news, you know, and what's real news? Is it just the source? Like, I've never really read Slate or The Hill or Politico before. Can I trust that that's honest to God journalism, or is that, you know, fake news, clickbait, you know, stuff that I see online?
I was going to, if you don't mind, this is Dave, Andrietta, Patrick. If you don't mind, I was going to ask you to provide a couple of examples, but the examples you're providing are the likes of Slate and The Hill and that sort of thing. Is that?
Yeah. So, like, right. You know, those are things that come to mind that, you know, I've seen on Facebook or seen on Twitter, Politico, and those are the things that I kind of think are real news, but, you know, sometimes post things that seem kind of out there, and maybe it's just that we live in a weird time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there's examples like Bipartisan Report or, you know, like, Breitbart is been in the news, in the real news recently. They have fake news on it. I see stuff pop up in my social media, and you know, I can't tell what's fake and what's real.
And let me just, Patrick, first of all, stay on the line. Second of all, I would say, you know, I think there's a difference between fake news and propaganda, and fake
yes.
news and sort of Breitbart is mostly news with a very direct position or viewpoint of the world, but not necessarily fake news that's meant to sort of dupe or... I think there are gradations here. But anyway, Patrick, stay there. Dick and Dave want to jump in. Go ahead, Dick.
A couple of things that you can look for, regardless of where it's coming from. Because sometimes legitimate media makes mistakes too. Look for who they're is there anybody cited for the information, and who that is? What do you think their qualifications are? Is it somebody qualified to know what they're talking about? Very often, the fake news sources will just put something out there without citing anybody or citing a source, quoting anybody.
Anonymous sourcing.
Anonymous sourcing. And that's one thing that we in the legitimate media need to be much more careful about going forward is being very careful about use of anonymous sources, because I think that's one of the areas that we get in trouble in. Check the sourcing. Who is the information coming from? And are they quoting legitimate sources? That's one of the big ways that you can tell.
Yeah, and I'd like to jump in too. You know, we live in a society of instant gratification, and it's tempting to see when you see something in your news feed that sounds just spectacular and out of this world to instantly share it and comment on it. But I would argue for some of those stories that sound fantastic, take a step back and just wait a day or two and take a look for how much pickup those stories get in other news outlets. There was a story that went around shortly before the election that Hillary Clinton was a ringleader in a child sex slave ring that was run out of a Washington D.C. pizzeria. And I actually got a letter, it was an email from a reader wondering why I wasn't writing about this. It was
complete. It's a big story.
Right. I mean, that sounds like a big, big story. It turns out to be completely bogus. And in fact, that story had been sort of ramping up for a number of weeks, all on the same, alt-right fake news website and others like it. I would argue that yes, you can still trust your New York Times, your Washington Post, your Boston Globe, and your Democrat and Chronicle, particularly for local news. We're not going to sit on stories that are fantastic. If they are fantastic and they bear out in the reporting, we'll report them, regardless of who they may harm politically, you know.
And just remember, for all of the talk that the New York Times is the most liberal newspaper ever, they have broken stories that have taken down leading Democratic careers. They broke the Moreland Commission story with Governor Cuomo. They've done so. So anyway, I would say, Patrick, I think Dick's point is a very good one. If you're not familiar with the source, first of all, maybe don't share it until you learn more. I tell myself, don't share a story that seems too good to be true or seems to confirm what you want to believe. Almost take a scientific method approach. Instead of saying, trying to prove it's true, try to prove it's not true, or at least ask yourself, has this been shared elsewhere? Has this been corroborated by other sources? And is the actual news story quoting people directly? Is it referring to people? Are they part of the conversation about it? But I share your concern here, and I hope we've helped a little bit. You want to follow up real quick?
Yeah, I just, I appreciate the opinions, and, I definitely see how real news can use unnamed sources, like, senior White House officials or, blah, 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 people who aren't at liberty to discuss or, aren't in a position to discuss public matters. I mean, it just kind of sounds like common sense, a healthy dose of skepticism, and, check your sources. Getting it from three different sources is really the only way. It's just, it's tough in the instant gratification, the age of Twitter and of Facebook, and where it's just difficult to always be skeptical of everything that you read, but at the same time trying to read more and more. And now we've got a president-elect who is using the instant gratification and tweeting about and that's his preferred method of getting interacting with his constituents. And it's tough. It's a real challenge to discern the signal from the noise.
I think that's well said, Patrick. Good luck. And one other quick point, and we'll get back to your phone calls. There's a proliferation of ostensible news sources out there, and they all have names like the Bipartisan Report or, you know, the Basket of Puppies Journalism, all these things that are, you know, that look harmless on the outside.
Freedom Daily.
Yeah, right. You know,
I could use a daily dose of freedom.
I'm going to make the Center to Restore Journalism. You know, there has to be something like that. Just be careful. And some of these things are very legitimate, and some of these are just fronts for ideology or whatever it is. And Patrick, you're right. Sometimes they say White House sources. Sometimes they just say things like, we have learned.
Yeah.
Where did you learn it? As Dick points out, where did you learn it? Let me get back to your phone calls. Owen in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Owen.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I wanted to ask the guests if they're aware of any research suggesting ways around or through confirmation bias. People often have no motivation for checking sources if the story fits their fears and angers. Right, they shift into limbic system lizard brain defensiveness as opposed to any kind of curiosity or open-mindedness. Like face-to-face with a trusted friend, that's easier. But with news, right, we don't have the face-to-face or personal trust. So are you guys aware of any research suggesting possible paths forward?
Gosh.
That's a tough one.
I hate to leave dead air here and not not answer. I'm not aware of any research on that front.
I have to tell you, I'm not either.
I think what you just used the term again, confirmation bias. I think these concepts must be taught earlier in life. I think we have to get them into the schools and get kids to understand as they become adults that if you use motivated reasoning in everything you do, you know, for example, if you supported Barack Obama and you wanted to resist the fact that there are big premium hikes coming under Obamacare, you missed a big story and it motivated a big part of the electorate. And it is real. And I heard a lot of people who did not want to sort of grapple with that. That doesn't mean that you have to repeal or junk a whole system. But again, if you would refuse to share a story because you voted for somebody, et cetera, that's motivated reasoning. That's potentially confirmation bias. But I don't see any other way right now other than championing it, making it a value again. Right. I don't really know what to do.
Well, you know, there was a story just recently in the Wall Street Journal that was citing a Stanford study. And I'm unable to pull it up on my phone, so I'm loath to sort of throw out data and numbers because I don't remember exactly. But the crux of it was that most adolescents can't tell the difference between fake news and real news.
Yeah.
And the fake news that they were talking about were, you know, the websites, the Freedom Dailies of the world that just are purveyors of lies. But also, and this is, I think, something that the mainstream media has to pay attention to, because they are in some sense perpetuating this with native advertising and sponsored content. You know, these were kids who couldn't understand the difference between a regular news story and then looking at a news story with a headline, you know, the 10,000 things you can do with a crescent roll, written by Pillsbury.
But it's meant to look like a news story.
It's meant to
look
like
a news story. Same kind of a headline. And Dave, because you brought it up, I mean, are you biting the hand that feeds you in criticizing it or at least drawing attention to it? Because it is a source of revenue in some places.
Sure, to some extent. I mean, Gannett does use it, but so does the New York Times.
And so does Slate, and so does many others online.
Yeah, I think it's a problem. I know that many of my colleagues do too, but I think it's an industry-wide problem, and the industry right now is grappling with ways to find revenue as print advertising dollars shrink. This is one way that the brain trust has come up with. As we move down this road and have further discussions like this about fake news, I think they may want to rethink that.
And I have a question for Dick because John, the engineer, has been grappling with full phone lines, and we're late for a break. But one quick question for Dick. We'll take a break, and then your phone calls the rest of the hour. Donald Trump hasn't done a news conference in, I think, 280 days or something like that now. And I find that to be a serious problem. And there were some who said yesterday, look what he gets out of that. He can release videos now, straight to the web, straight to Twitter, straight to YouTube to make his announcements. He can use social media. People tweet it and retweet it. And he goes to a carrier plant in which he goes back on so many different campaign promises. Remember, during the campaign, he said he would make sure Carrier didn't send those jobs to Mexico because he would threaten to hit them with a tariff and they would know not to. It turns out they had to basically pay them a ransom, which is what he criticized Democrats and Obama for doing. Now he does it and he wants a hero's welcome. He doesn't do a news conference to take questions on it. He shows up and he gets wall-to-wall cable network coverage out of it. Dick, if you were a news director, The hard question I think people were asking is, should you just give him the coverage without him being willing to answer questions from the press? Or do you say, we're not playing this game unless you answer questions? What do you do with that?
It's hard to not play that game.
I know.
Because if you ignore it, then you get lambasted for ignoring it. So you've got to pay attention to it to some extent. On the question of not having news conferences, Hillary was not good about having news conferences either.
No question about it.
So we've got to keep that in mind as well. There's an across the political spectrum.
There's a problem
with talking with
many,
the media.
Many.
Yes. So we need to keep that in mind. What we end up with when we do these kinds of things and when we cover that kind of thing is this he said, she said kind of talk where Trump will do something and then we go to the opposition and get a quote from them and we don't really end up with a conclusion on anything. And one of the things that we have to do going forward is try to find ways to give our audience a conclusion of what's real and what's not somehow. That's going to mean more work on our end at a time when we don't have the resources that we used to have, but we're going to have to do those kinds of things to deal with the reality that we find ourselves in.
You know, just if I could dovetail on what Dick said about it's tough to not cover these things because if you don't cover them, you get lambasted by critics. But at the same time, he's arguably, you know, a month away from becoming the most powerful man in the free world. Doesn't he deserve a microphone? You know, I mean, I the answer, I think, is yes to some extent. I mean, you want to capture what he's saying. Right.
But if a year from now we're sitting here and he has not done a single news conference and taken questions from actual journalists, do you continue to play the game the same way or does it have to change eventually? I think that's kind of what the question is here.
Well, I think you've got to find different ways to play the game. I read a funny in a sad way, essay by someone from South Africa who, it was an open letter to U.S. journalists and saying, well, now you're going to find out what we have to deal with because we don't get access. And we have to find different ways to go around the fact that we're not getting access to the top. That means reporting through agency heads and through agencies rather than through the top person. Those kinds of things are things that we're going to have to look at as journalists to moving forward.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour. Back to your phone calls, full phones for Dick Moss, the news director of the Democrat and Chronicle, Dave Andreatta, who is a columnist and reporter and a longtime journalist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Your call's next. Coming up in our second hour, we are coming up on 500 years since Martin Luther's famous event. As the New Yorker recently chronicled, he either did or did not nail a paper known as the 95 Theses to the church door in Wittenberg, Germany. But regardless, what he did do is call out what he called the hypocrisy in the church. And this revolutionary, what's his legacy 500 years later? That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and back to the phones we go. This is Gyla in Rochester. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. Evan, especially, I want to tell you how much we appreciate your daily focus on the issues that we face as a nation.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
I think people are not as interested, not all people, but some more in trying to force their opinion or cause more so than the truth. They don't think about, or the unfamiliar makes them feel vulnerable, bringing feelings of insecurity and hostility. And we're so quick to expose or vilify another's differences or shortcomings before we know all the facts, caring less about the truth of the matter and more about justifying our own cause or opinions. And my question is, you were saying how education should change focus and how people reason through that, but I know personally from my own family that it's also a family matter, and children will pretty much parrot a lot of what is told them by their parents. And if they themselves are not willing to take the time to examine and question the things that are in the news media, I don't know if a school can do it all.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, Gyla. I mean, I think that there is room for media literacy, news literacy courses in public education at some of the earliest levels, but as well as at the levels of higher education. You know, I was on a panel the other day, an external review team looking at MCC's journalism program. They have a fine program there. But some of the issues that came up in speaking with students at the Monroe Doctrine, which is the student newspaper there, was this very issue that some of them acknowledged to having come into the job with an interest in newspapers or a curiosity, but not really knowing the difference between what was fake and what was real, and not having much of an education on that. Most of them acknowledged not reading the newspaper, not just the local newspaper, but even national publications such as the DNC. You know, recently Leonard Pitts, a syndicated columnist who appears in the DNC, I think on Mondays, wrote a column that I really enjoyed, and it was about the answer to fake news, and his answer to fake news was newspapers. So you can see why I like it. But basically his point was, you know, are newspapers a perfect medium to relay information? No. Are their stories sometimes underlined with bias? Yes, but never. In his experience or mine, do they peddle in false and phony facts without, you know, corroborate? Do they peddle in false and phony facts? No, and that was his point. And he led that column with a quote from Thomas Jefferson, which I wrote down here: "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be." And I think that's really poignant.
Well said.
Absolutely,
and Dick. Can I just ask briefly? And I don't know if you know this or can say or. Not necessarily your job. Subscription isn't your job. News is your job. But the New York Times, the New Yorker, the Atlantic Monthly all saw a swell of subscriptions after the election. That there is, I think, a moment where people are saying, "There, let's come home to traditional, well-trained, hardworking journalism." Are we seeing any of that with the Democrat and Chronicle?
I honestly don't keep up on those numbers.
Okay. Well, that's probably a good thing. You stay out of the sales part of the building.
I try to stay out of that part.
I actually appreciate that answer. I don't think it's... but. Let me just say, I hope the answer is yes, and I don't know that the answer is yes. I hope we see more memberships to WXXI. I hope that people are seeing the value. Let me go to Mark in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello. I had a question about the presentation of facts. Just an example from this morning. I was listening to NPR, and one of the news points was that Donald Trump had won Wisconsin by, I don't know the exact number, but it was close to 0.5%. But they presented it as just 0.5%. And I was thinking that another way to present that would be you won by Wisconsin by, I don't know, over 60,000 votes. And one of those presentations, they're both true, one of the presentations is much more favorable to the president-elect than the other. And when you sort of notice those the more negative connotation presented, the negative statistics presented over and over again, you start to question the bias of the news source. And once you do that, you start to question the validity of what they present. So if your panels can just discuss how to prevent that.
Well, do you think that, I'd be curious just to hear your thought on this. Would you understand, would you be able to put into perspective an actual number of votes? Like if someone were to say Donald Trump won Wisconsin by whatever the number was, I'll just use yours, 60,000 votes, would you be able to understand that context? I mean, would you know that that's either a runaway by Donald Trump or a narrow margin?
Oh, well, I might, 60,000, was that several football stadiums with people? I would think that was... sizable margin that shouldn't be questioned with a recount.
But if 6 billion people vote, 60,000 is a squeaker. So I think Dave's point is, if 65,000 people vote and you win by 60,000, that is a blowout. But the context matters there. I think that was part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess what I would argue is that, you know, in defense of, I think you said you saw this on NPR, in defense of NPR, I think they were probably trying to add that context to this. You know, on the campaign trail, I remember a source of contention was Donald Trump's claim, which was true. And I'm going to botch these numbers a little bit because I don't remember exactly, but bear with me. He said something to the effect of, under Hillary's plan, we will see a 660% increase in the number of Syrian refugees.
550%.
550%. Yeah, okay, that's what it was. Yes. All right, I got 666 on the brain somehow. I don't know how. But 550%, which was actually true when you broke down those numbers. But the... In context, the number of Syrian refugees that the U.S. was taking in certainly compared to other paled and compared to other countries. And so while it would that number would increase substantially percentage wise, the U.S. would have still been behind what many other.
It was starting from a very low point.
It was starting from a low point.
Yeah. So I think that context is what. But Mark, I don't know if that's sort of where what you're driving at here. That sometimes context feels biased.
I was driving at that statistics, those type of thing, where you can present, you can have a true number, and but you can really pick the number, whether it doesn't really present the context or not. You can pick the number that proves your point. And a conservative news source could pick one number that would be true. Liberal news source could pick another number that's a percentage rather than a definite number that would also be true. And but which one you choose can give some inclination as to the message you're trying to send about the subject.
Okay, well, Mark, I appreciate that, but let me hit that, and maybe Dick and Dave can follow up with this. What's acceptable to me is, let's say the marginal, let's just say we're operating with a flat tax rate of 10% in this country, and Dave's running for president, and he wants to raise it to 12%. So that would be a 20% increase or a 2 percentage point increase. And some people think, well, 12% is still below most nations. That's not much. But some news sites might say, that's a massive increase. I don't really care how that's portrayed. There's going to be different ideologies that debate that. What I would care is if they are lying bold-faced about what the actual current tax rate is and what his plan is. People can characterize how they want. And you're right, numbers can be spun in different ways. We are looking, though, at a very different problem of people just consuming things that are outright untrue entirely.
Right.
And what you're saying is important. You know, the way that sometimes you perceive that the media is only choosing statistics that are harmful to one candidate or harmful to another. But you cannot operate successfully in a world where there are fake and totally invented numbers. And I'm just to be blunt, we are seeing that with the president-elect almost every day. This 3 million votes thing is, if he really believes that he's the president-elect, we should have a national scandal. We should have a national redo of an election if he really believes there are millions of people whose votes are counting and they should not. But of course he doesn't believe that, and people are consuming that. That's the bigger issue to me.
The safest thing to do, I think, in statistics, if you're reporting, is to really report both. A 0.5% right. margin, you know, equivalent to 60,000 votes or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Dick, I know that you're a huge proponent of that when we do tax stories,
yep.
right? You know, you want to know if the tax rate is increasing X percent, you want to know what the average, you know, homeowner in Henrietta will pay next year, whatever
exactly.
it is.
Because, it's a good idea. Just a percentage just doesn't really put it in context, and good editing is one of the ways to solve that problem, because editors who are versed in that kind of thing keep an eye out for it.
All right, let me get Robert in Fairport, who wants to talk about media bias. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I think that one reason we're hearing a lot about this today is that the mainstream press has lost a lot of position as the gatekeeper for news. The barriers to entry these days are so low that, you know, news can come from almost anywhere. And also the rise of advocacy journalism has kind of colored that, because you don't know if news source is actually reporting or if they're trying to persuade. The other thing with media bias is the Pew organization has done some pretty good surveying on this, and it's really at both ends of the spectrum. They did a 2014 survey that found political ideology of various listeners of news audiences, and you know, as far as right wing, you're looking at Hannity, Limbaugh, and O'Reilly. But on the left, you've got Rachel Maddow at the top of the Colbert Report and the Daily Show, and NPR's, you know, in the ballpark there. So I think that the bias comes from both ends.
No question about that. No question about it. It definitely does.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, too, that the barrier to entry has been so diminished. I mean, anyone nowadays can be a publisher and be a news writer, if you will, although there's still much value, I think, in traditionally trained journalists who are actually corroborating their stories, using multiple sources. You know, a lot of what you read online, you know, or I shouldn't say online, but, you know, Facebook friends, they're not really doing the news gathering that traditional journalists are doing.
Yes, they're not really vetting certain things.
Sure.
Yeah. And we got an email from a listener named Mike who sent us a note saying, hey, going back to the panel talking to the CNN reporter about Obama, it was Obama who told all these illegal immigrants to vote, in the words of this panel. And Mike sends an email saying, here it is. Watch Obama tells illegals to vote on YouTube. And he sent the link. Producer Megan Mack watched it and then found the original source and found that the link that Mike sent is edited. And what Barack Obama was actually telling people was that he's telling people who are citizens to vote to make sure their voice is heard, especially if they are speaking for people who can't legally vote.
Evan, I know you've got a lot of callers. I just want to tell this quick story.
Yeah.
I got an email from a guy once who said, why aren't we why isn't the DNC or anyone reporting on this? And it was a link, and it was President Obama speaking at some sort of conference, and it was him, the presidential seal there. And the message was something like, I'm President Obama and I love Kim Jong-un and we're going to be great friends and we're going to move forward together in harmony. But the way that the clip was set up, it would show President Obama saying, I'm President Obama. Then it would be a cut to a very far away picture of Obama. So you couldn't see his mouth or his lips moving and an audio sound over that saying something, I love, next clip. Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
It was absolutely
ham-fisted,
nonsense.
Ham-fisted stuff. And that's why, Mike, if you're still listening and you sent this clip, listen, if the president of the United States, no matter their party, came out and said, if you are in this country illegally, I want you to vote on Election Day and you'll be able to do it, and that's what this country needs, I guarantee you it would be the lead story on every news agency. And if you don't believe it, I would ask you to look within. I would ask you to ask yourself why you believe that's true. Because Barack Obama did not tell undocumented people to vote.
Ask yourself, you know, some of the burden of this falls on the listener and the readers as well, the news consumers. Ask yourself if these stories make sense. Does it make sense that Hillary Clinton ran a child sex slave ring in the basement of a Washington pizzeria?
I know.
No, it doesn't.
I know. And but that's why I say we are in weird times. But we have... maybe more than any conversation, maybe the most this year, phone calls, tweets, and emails. So what that tells me is, listeners, you want to keep talking about this. And I promise you we will. We're just about out of time. So Dick Moss, maybe some final thoughts from you as we go forward here. You know, you're sort of this, you know, this traditional, hardworking newsman. And you said it's an interesting time. What's one of your takeaways here?
I just pay attention to what you're looking at and look at where the sources is. Are there multiple sources for it? And what we just said, does it make sense? And you've got to ask yourself those questions as you're looking at any material.
Almost challenge your biases.
Yeah.
Figure out whatever your biases are and ask yourself to almost vet them even harder. Go ahead, Dave.
You know, well, that said, you'd mentioned to me in preparation for the show, you know, you asked whether you thought that this election was a referendum on the media. I think there's room for debate there. I wouldn't say it's a referendum on the media, but I think it was definitely a referendum on the establishment. And now the question is, to what extent is the media part of that establishment? I mean, one thing is for sure, that the media has been, and I'm going to say the media with the air quotes around it, right?
Yeah.
The media, I think, generally is disconnected from a huge portion of the American electorate.
The voting public.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
That we purport to represent. And it's incumbent upon us to do a better job. I will tell you, I got a tweet here from someone named Mark. I think you got it as well, Evan. This sort of restores my faith in humanity when someone is clever like this to the panel. How do I know you're not faking talking about fake news?
Nice way to end the conversation. But you know what, though? I agree with you, David. I think we all just have to make sure that we are going out of our way to get out of our bubbles, media included. And there have been lessons, but we also have to look within. And if you want to share a story that Barack Obama is encouraging all of these undocumented people to vote, and they will be able to do that, and that somehow through the popular vote, look within too. Everybody should look within here. Dave Andriotta's got a book coming out. Dave, 20 seconds, go. Tell us about it.
All right. It's a compilation of some of my columns from the last couple of years. It's called I've Got This. It's available on Amazon. It can be downloaded beginning December 8th, and I'll be having a Facebook Live chat on December 8th at 8 o'clock.
Go to Amazon, search for David Andriotta. Thanks, Dave. Dick Moss from the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
More connections next.